Hello and welcome to Mount Podmore, the political podcast of the Rapid City Journal. I'm your host, Seth Tupper. My guest today is Christopher Motz, who is from Sioux Falls and is the first executive director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference. It's a newly created conference that exists to serve as the official voice of the bishops of South Dakota on issues of public policy. Well, Chris Motz, welcome to the Mount Podmore Political Podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So I want to start, and you probably got this question a bunch of times already, so I apologize if it's old for you, but I have to start by asking, we've all been told that we shouldn't mix religion and politics if we want to get along with people. And so you have a job where it seems to me that's your job, is to mix religion and politics. So how do you handle that?
Well, it makes Thanksgiving dinner really tough.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting question, delicately is maybe one way to approach it, but also to name it right up front that this is hard for some people to talk about sometimes, but it's okay. Neighbors can talk about things like that.
Yeah.
People who live together can talk about things like this.
Can they? And get along?
Sure. I hope so.
Yeah.
We're in trouble if they can't.
Yeah. So do you think it's gotten harder, though, in society to talk about those things without getting into a heated debate or fight or something?
Well, I think, just maybe let me step back a little bit. Before stepping into my current role, I served in the Marines a number of years. I was a Marine Infantry officer. In 2005, I was sitting in a classroom in Quantico, Virginia, and a three-star general kind of stepped to the front of this room, full of young lieutenants. I was a young lieutenant at the time. It was a man named General James Mattis. He's lieutenant general.
Yeah.
And he said, young men, young women, your job is to defend the experiment. Defend the experiment.
Yeah. The American.
The American experiment.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the outcome isn't set. It isn't predetermined. We kind of have to work for it. Every person, every family, every block and neighborhood, you've got to work for it. And working for it requires that we speak with one another. It's kind of interesting. General Mattis and I have no idea his religious affiliation. He's now Secretary of Defense, and when he was stepping into that role, there was a guy at the New Yorker magazine, I think it was Dexter Filkins, was interviewing him. He said, what are you worried about stepping into this role? What are you most worried about? What do you think he said?
I don't know.
Yeah, like
working with Donald Trump.
Secretary of Defense wasn't worried about Iran, wasn't worried about China, wasn't worried about Russia. He's worried about civil discourse.
Okay.
It's important. It's it's important to our life together, regardless of where you're coming from.
Yeah. So. You talked about, as a Marine, you were defending the American experiment. And your job now, do you feel like you're protecting the experiment that is freedom of religion in America?
I wouldn't even narrow it down to I would just stay with the first premise. You know, when I visit with South Dakotans about freedom of religion, It's first in our Bill of Rights because it's important. It's important not just for you and me as individuals who are wanting to practice our faith every day of the week. It's important. It's important to our life together. It's number one because it's actually it's good for the common good.
Mm-hmm. To what is just to
the to exercise one's faith.
Okay.
And I think one of the distinctions that's important to highlight is. There can be a tendency at times for people to think that freedom of religion means freedom of worship. Keep it in your church on Sunday.
Yeah.
Or in your mosque on Friday, or in your synagogue on Saturday. That's not what the Constitution says. It says freedom of religion. And really, that's what it requires, is that that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to compartmentalize one's life like that. Oh, I'm this person on this day, but then I'm a completely different person the other 6 days of the week. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not authentic.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I want to back up a little bit. As I understand it, this is a relatively newly created job, so I wonder if you could give the background on why didn't this job exist before and why does it exist now?
Sure. Well, the South Dakota Catholic Conference is the 43rd state to have a Catholic conference, and maybe it'd even be helpful to just say what it is.
Sure.
It is the institutional ambassador to the public square on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church in South Dakota. So I work for Bishop Robert Gruce. He's the bishop of the Diocese of Rapid City, and Bishop Paul Swain, the bishop of the Diocese of Sioux Falls. I'm their eyes, ears, and at their discretion, occasionally their voice on matters of law and public policy. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I'm engaging in the public square, happy to visit with public officials, visit with civic groups, churches, visit with secular reporters who aren't Catholic. Like it's a mission in the public square. Why does it exist now and it didn't before? Well, the Catholic conferences that exist in other states were born following the Second Vatican Council, which was a period for the Catholic Church in which the leaders of the Church were really trying to think through how do we engage the modern world. The gospel doesn't change. The good news is the same yesterday, today, and always. But how are we communicating it? Are we communicating it in a way that is readily received? So it's been described by some as a missionary council, like with this impulse of telling once more the good news story of the Christian faith to the world. And it's through this lens that we can see the birth and growth of Catholic conferences in various states. There truly is a missionary flavor to it.
So, what if you said this is the 43 others, or this is the 43rd, I forget which one, but
sure.
Why did it take so long for South Dakota to do this, and why now?
Yeah, and maybe that's I guess I don't know what the perception is, but the Catholic Church, you know, the Pope in Rome, okay, it's not exactly like the military where there's an order that flows down. That individual bishops have a lot of authority within their own jurisdiction. And the church, as I kind of alluded to earlier, is organized on a diocesan level. So there is geographic territory that may or may not align with a particular boundary of a state. So the mm-hmm. boundary of the yeah. geopolitical thing we call South Dakota mm-hmm. happens to overlap two Catholic dioceses. And it was just time that the bishops thought, okay, I think in the past it'd been more on an ad hoc level, but the time that they came that they just thought it'd be beneficial to be a little more organized and speak with a common voice on policy matters across the state.
You mentioned the importance of civil discourse. Did the breakdown of civil discourse in our country, was that a catalyst for the creation of this?
No, I think actually, the discussions about this have been going on for many, many years. As I said, it's been a slow and steady trickle for the last 50 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it would be wrong to equate the two.
So, we talked about why this was created, but why did you want this job? What made you interested in this?
Well, I guess two reasons. I've kind of already mentioned a bit of my military service. I'm a young guy from South Dakota. I just happen to love my country a lot. I've had the honor and pleasure of serving with some of America's finest young men and women, and I think the American experiment is one of the greatest things that I've had the pleasure of serving. The other piece of that is that I'm gung-ho all in for Christianity. And for me, it's not, it's born of a relationship with the Lord. It's not just an ethical decision, like, oh, this is a good way of life, and if I follow these rules, things will work out okay with me. It's not merely like an ethical choice. It's an encounter with a person who's come to save me. It's come to save everybody. And an encounter with that person that has really given my life a decisive direction and opened up a horizon that is, for me, one of the things that I guess you might say marks my work and it makes it meaningful to me.
I'd ask a dumb question. You are Catholic, right?
Yeah. No, fair question.
And, did you grow up Catholic?
Yeah, I was raised in a Catholic family. Although I had when I was a younger guy during college, I had like a profound moment. There was a period of time, and even a moment I can point to, of just a real deepening of the faith, and taking something that was given to me as a child, but actually exercising my own mind and will in choosing it for myself in a real way.
So when was that?
It was in June of 2004, and Catholics believe that Christ is present in the Eucharist, and I just had a real deep experience of prayer before the Blessed Sacrament.
Okay. And so, what exactly do you see as your mission in this job, then?
Yeah, it's to be an ambassador is a really important thing. You know, when I'm up in the Capitol during the legislative session, I do wear a lobbyist badge. But the church is not a special interest group. It's not a political action committee. It doesn't endorse political parties. It doesn't endorse candidates. Okay. It's an advocate, an ambassador for truth.
Are you yourself a member of any political party?
No.
No? Are you independent, Democrat, Republican?
That's a question. No, that's okay. Nobody's asked me that question yet, and I've kind of been giving it some thought. It kind of actually fits with kind of my background as a Marine, too, because Marines are super, like, apolitical. Mm-hmm. The point is, we're just there to serve. Like, the experiment is good, and we're there to serve it. So one of my messages when I'm speaking with Catholics across the state, it's like faithful citizenship. The church isn't going to tell you. And to be clear, when I'm speaking, for the bishops. So it's a deliberate choice for me in that sense to not register. But when I'm speaking with individual Catholics, it's like the church supports you. You want to register as a Democrat? Go get them. Mm-hmm. You want to register as a Republican? Go for it. You've got a crazy idea for a third party? Like, love God and do as you will.
Yeah.
Like, those are the words of a famous saint. So the point is, like, form your conscience, form your mind, like, actually pursue truth and go out into the public square. The political vocation, in the church's view, is a vocation of the lay faithful, okay. not of the clergy, who I speak for.
Okay. You mentioned peer, so you spent some time in peer this session, apparently.
Yeah.
I wonder if you tell me what bills were you active on. I assume you lobbied on some bills. What were some of them?
I took, the Catholic Conference took positions in support of Senate Bill 110 and House Bill 1123, I'm remembering that right. So Senate Bill 110 was a bill strengthening some of the responsibilities of pregnancy help centers. 1123, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's 1121, 1123. it was a bill that would have banned the death penalty for the seriously mentally ill.
Okay.
So, as I just mentioned, like the church herself isn't the political party. So when I'm testifying before a committee, on both of those different bills, I'm getting all sorts of different people patting me on the back, depending on the particular bill.
Were people in peer, were legislators surprised to see you there, to see somebody from the Catholic Church in the position that you have now? Or I don't know if the church has had, lobbyists per se, or is this a new thing that legislators are seeing from the church?
One of the dioceses has had a presence in peer in the past. You know, I think it's, I couldn't speculate as to whether they were surprised or not. I felt I was warmly received, and mm-hmm. and there is a bit of a challenge to when you're wearing a lobbyist badge. It's like, oh, you're a lobbyist. Okay, yeah, I guess I'm wearing a lobbyist badge. But I'll say it again. I'm sure I'll say it many more times. Like, the church is not a special interest group. Really, the goal is the common good. The motto of the South Dakota Catholic Conference is Quarite Pacem Civitatis. It's from Jeremiah 29. It's seek the good of the city. Okay. So, So the Jews, they're in exile. They're in Babylon. They're a little cranky. And they just want everything perfect right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just deliver us is essentially was their complaint. We're sick of this. Mm-hmm. We don't like Babylon. Through the prophet Jeremiah, the Lord sends word, and he tells them, you're going to be there a while. You need to do a couple things. You need to build houses. You need to plant gardens. You need to give your children in marriage, essentially establish families and establish a livelihood. And then he says, seek the good of the city. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a Marine and a Catholic that I like the Latin. But Quarite Pacem Civitatis is seek the peace of the city, or it could be translated the state, you know, the unit of government. Because to its good, your own is tied. So it's like, we're all in this together, Seth.
Yeah.
There's no you versus me. It's like
I'm not sure all the legislators feel the same way, but
you know, and it's good to say that. People appreciate that. Like,
yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
That's kind of back to General Mattis again. He's like, an interview he just gave the other week, he's like, I wish we could just like sit down and disagree with one another and go have a beer.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And disagreeing with one another is actually really important. The exercise of free speech, the very first public defense of free speech as a human right was made by a Catholic named Thomas More. He was a speaker of the House of Commons in England in the early 16th century. And the reason he said it was important to have the freedom of speech, that's how we get at the truth. Like, that's how we, you know?
Yeah.
That's how we take different angles at it, and that's how we get there.
I want to ask you, you mentioned that one of the bills you took a position on was about abortion. And I would assume that given our politics and the debate around that issue, some people will hear that the Catholics have a lobbyist. They're going to assume that you're pretty much an anti-abortion lobbyist. That's going to be an assumption that some people will make, I assume. How would you respond to that?
I'm not anti-anything. I'm all my folders, my little file folders, they're all green. They're all green lights.
Yeah.
I'm for life, is what I am. So, you know, I guess you can characterize that however you choose to, but it's like life is a good. It's a good for every single person, whether born or not.
And you assume how do you decide what bills you'll take a position on? I mean, what do you bring to a review of bills that says we're going to take a position on that and that, and not other things?
Yeah, it's there's a bit of judgment in there, and I don't know if I can say this, but the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
So we look at each bill one at a time.
Okay. You mentioned the other one was the death penalty, and I think I read this in one of your pieces in the newsletter, West River Catholic, that you were surprised that a lot of people don't know the Catholic positions on capital punishment, on the death penalty. So what is the Catholic position on the death penalty?
It's opposed to it.
Okay.
And it's nuanced. Again, I don't mean that. The devil's in the details. Like, and it's all in the catechism. Like, I should have brought one up for you, because it's all right there. Like, there are, with the Catholic Church, there are no secrets. It's all in writing.
Yeah.
It's all written down. So with abortion, for example, it's what we call an intrinsic evil. It's always wrong. It can never be okay. With the death penalty, the traditional teaching of the Catholic Church has not excluded recourse to the death penalty when necessary to protect society. So and you can go look at it's paragraph 2267 for any of your listeners.
Okay.
Google it, paragraph 2267 of the Catholic Catechism.
Okay.
But there's a very beautiful document that the paragraph is based on. It's called Evangelium Vitae, which means the Gospel of Life. It's written by John Paul II. It goes on to say, in paragraph 2267, that given the advances in our society for securing criminals, people that have committed heinous crimes, the death penalty should be, quote, very rare, if not practically non-existent, end quote. And then the catechism paragraph is pulling exactly from 2267. And one of the things that really speaks to me about that is like, you know, John Paul II, I don't know if you know anything about this guy, but he's not a wilting daisy. Like he suffered, or Hitler, he suffered under Stalin. Like he looked evil in the eye, like the bloodiest century of all times, the 20th century, and yet here's a man that's insisting like actually there's a better way.
I should circle back to the
sure.
abortion related bill that you supported that passed, correct?
Yeah, the governor signed
and
it.
The death penalty bill that you supported ended up that failed.
It true. Ultimately, it failed.
Okay. Yeah. I want to talk about the Pope for a second. I think there's a perception in society, maybe even among some in the Catholic Church, that the current Pope is pushing the Church in a more, what people would call a more politically liberal direction. Is that a misperception? Is that accurate? Or what do you think about that?
I mean, like I said, the teaching of the Catholic Church, it's all in black and white for people to read. And I know this is not always apparent to folks that are just maybe catching snippets in the news. So the Pope has a teaching office. It's called a magisterium. The Holy Father, you know when he's exercising his teaching office and when he's not for us Catholics who are kind of watching. But at the end of the day, I'd say that any efforts to like characterize our Holy Father one way or the other, like, I don't know. I'm not going to try and do that. And I would urge caution to anybody that does.
Okay. You mentioned earlier, apparently you won't be, the Catholic Conference won't be endorsing candidates, apparently.
No, that's just not, and that's a hard and fast, that's never going to happen.
Okay.
So.
What about ballot issues? We have a bunch of ballot issues coming up this year statewide, you know, ballot issues. Will the conference take positions on ballot issues?
I mean, it's possible. At this point in time, I don't have a position on any of the ballot issues that have been certified.
Okay. Okay. That's a possibility in the future.
It could happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's probably our time, great. And I'll wrap up. But thanks a lot for joining us. I really
was happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah.
I hope to visit again sometime.